Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Big Life Podcast on Full Service Radio. We are Lina Salazar
and Ingrid Vaishus,
broadcasting live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. When we are stressed and burn out, our lives become small. On the weekend, rather than taking a break from work email, we feel the urge to always be on. We can't sleep because our minds wander back to our to-do lists, and we skip lunch because we have back-to-back meetings. Living a big life is the opposite. We live beyond work and deadlines, and we prioritize the things that we value the most. In the big life, we hold inspiring and honest conversations with locals about the aha moment that helped them transition to living a bigger and more fulfilling life. We're very excited about today's episode. We are joined by Jolene Smith. Jolene is an anti-slavery trailblazer and meaning, purpose, and impact researcher. At the age of 25, she launched and, with the support of her team, grew the movement against modern slavery and human trafficking in the United States. Pretty powerful. Her work launching and growing this movement showed her that when we maximize both positive impact and the sense of meaning and purpose we derive from our actions, we create a virtuous cycle that fuels future mission-focused efforts. And today, we'll be exploring how finding and having a sense of purpose and meaning in life can help us reduce stress and improve our health. Welcome, Jolene.
Oh, thanks so much for having me.
Thank you for taking the time, because I know we all have full lives. So thank you so much for being here. And I'm super excited about the show because I feel like your personal experience will be very valuable and how you grew this movement, this amazing work, found your mission and your purpose at a very young age, and how you've been able to kind of adapt and change and see what has been working for you, what serves for you, but the process was not an easy one. So I think that'll be very useful for our listeners. But I also think that the amazing research you're doing around purpose, meaning, impact, and how that makes us happier and more fulfilled will be an absolutely wonderful way to end the show. So let's get to it.
Great. Such an honor to be with you too. What you each do is so important and right up my alley. I can't wait.
So great. Cool. So like Lina said in the introduction, you were very young when you found that thing that really you knew was your purpose in life. So why don't we start there? Like, tell us a little bit about how you got to that point, and what was that aha moment?
Much like my artist friends who say, well, I always liked drawing and painting or what have you, but it was only later that I realized exactly that I could and would go on to be an artist. I always knew that I wanted to work on something regarding human rights. Mm-hmm. And I just knew, okay, it's in Washington, D.C. Whatever I do, it has to be there. So made my way here and was working for a human rights organization and really thought, yep, I'm on my way. Great. And then fate struck or something struck. Mm-hmm. And my boss double booked a meeting and he said, hey, Jolene, you're into labor rights. You meet with this guy. Well, that guy was Kevin Bales, who wrote the very first book on modern slavery and human trafficking. And I had no idea what he was talking about. I sit down in this conference room with him, and I thought he was talking about worker exploitation, horrible things, and I was all about helping him, but I had no idea that it was real slavery. People held against their will under violence or threat of violence and paid nothing. Mm-hmm. And I went home and read the book. I'm like, oh, darn it. Now I've got to do something about it. And it just wouldn't let me go. Mm-hmm. I so wanted to. At the time, I was actually interviewing for some jobs on the Hill.
Oh, wow.
On Capitol Hill. Mm-hmm. And I so thought that's where I was going. Mm-hmm. And then, guess not, because this just wouldn't let me go. And so I emailed Kevin and said, hey, where can I volunteer on Saturdays? Or where do I send my $25 donation? And he said, well, that's the thing. There isn't an organization in the United States that's focused on eradicating slavery in all its forms. I want to start one. Will you help?
Mm. And you have a background. I feel like your background is a little or very much around helping, like creating systems, processes, fundraising. That I feel like is one of your strong suits, right?
It is now, and I had no idea about that when which was a big lesson to me, that we often don't know until we act, and then we see what sticks and what resonates.
And how was to create something from scratch, something so powerful from scratch?
Well, I was completely intimidated, number one. And I thought, I was convinced I couldn't do it. And I was also equally convinced that I wanted to be the person who at least tried.
Okay. Yeah. Wow. Oh, that's great. That's powerful.
And that was enough. It was enough to want to try.
Yeah.
And to just put one foot in front of the other. But every single step until, I don't know, we were at maybe a budget of $2 million. Until that point, every day I thought, there's no way I can pull this off.
Wow. So what did it teach you aside from, there's no way that I'm going to pull this off? What else did it teach you about yourself?
Oh, that's such an insightful question. What did it teach me about myself? Well, I have no idea what I am capable of or what anybody else is capable of. Therefore, we should just assume that the sky is the limit because the alternative is not helpful.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Doing nothing. It's always a choice. Yeah. That's a choice as well.
It is
doing
a choice. Nothing. And it really taught me too that, that there's this myth, or at least a myth that I bought into, that is really based on the industrial model, that we find that one thing very early in life that we're going to dedicate ourselves to, and that used to be a corporation, or it used to be farming, like many members of my family, and then we would stick with it our whole lives until we retired, and that was success.
And
there were varying degrees of success, but basically you're on the right path if you do that.
I feel like what you just said is what I work with a lot of clients on. I work with a lot of women who do human rights work, international development, are in leadership positions, and they're clear on what their mission and purpose is. They want to make a difference. They want to make a change, and they go down this career path, and they're chugging along. They're hitting every single milestone, and then they get to this point where they're mid upper level in their career, and they hit this like transition or this point where they're not motivated. Mm-hmm. They're losing sight of what was important. They're just not excited about it anymore, and it's like this crisis that they go through. And they're feeling pulled in a million different directions, but they're struggling with that internal. It's like, this is what I should be doing. I'm doing everything right, and yet I don't enjoy it, and I'm not liking it anymore, but I still believe in the cause, right?
Yes. I call these people halos.
Oh.
High-achieving, low-ostentation people.
We're going to write that down.
And what these high-achieving, low-ostentation people often do is they get so dedicated to mission that they're literally willing to do anything.
Yeah.
Work late, work weekends. Yes, I'll take that red eye in coach to, the 18-hour flight, whatever. And they're since they're so mission-focused, they totally disregard what their own talents and interests are, can totally disregard any opportunities for advancement because they're just simply looking at what does the cause need, and I will pretzel myself into that need and get it done.
Yeah.
And that is so wonderful when we are at that early stage of our career. And, hey, nobody knows at the age of 18, 21, 25, what they're absolutely good at. Very few of us do anyway. So we need to try a whole lot. Yeah, go ahead and pretzel.
Yeah. Okay,
go for it. Knock yourself out. But then at a certain point, after we do actually get enough information to make informed decisions about that and yet choose not to, that is when I see a lot of burnout creep in.
Yeah.
And they're not putting themselves forward for opportunities for advancement because I think, well, my ego doesn't need that. I'm not bent on only earning a lot of money.
Yeah.
So I will step aside. In fact, I will nominate my colleague. I see that so many times, especially with female identifying people. Not only that, but it's these really, truly mission-centered people who tend to do that. And exactly the kind of people I would love to see have more power, right?
Yeah.
That truly mission-centered person who loves promoting other people. That's who we want as leaders, and that's what got me into the coaching, executive advising work, because those are the people who I love supporting.
Yeah. It, like, building up on Ingrid's question about success, you've worked with both sides of the pyramid, the top and the bottom, right? You work with people living in slavery, as well as billionaires, famous people that on the surface, they look like they have it all. And yet you found that they felt unfulfilled and lacked purpose. So what lessons did you learn from these both sides, extremes of the pyramid, about resilience and purpose and meaning?
Absolutely. Yeah. Ooh, this was a real shocker for me. I had in my mind that anyone who had risen to the top of their field and really seemed like they had their life together, of course they were happy all the time. And little did I know that if we want to be happy all the time, we've chosen the wrong planet. We will have negative feelings. Yeah. We will have experiences that we wish happened differently, no matter if we're that person who is today stuck, enslaved in the brick kiln, and the person who is on the other side of the planet and the economic ladder, who is earning a lot of money, who might be very well known, but they also have these human needs of human connection and of growth and of really just creating, learning how to create their own reality, as opposed to abdicating that to authorities, whatever those authorities might be.
Yeah.
Wow. So I want to circle back to what we were talking about a little bit before, in terms of that moment, like that disenchantment phase, right? Where you're living your meaning, doing what you think you do, but then now you're stuck with all these responsibilities that were not aligning with what you thought you were going to be doing. I'm curious, did that happen to you at any point in the process? And if so, now that hindsight is 2020, how did you get out of it, and how did you reassess? Because I feel like that is one of the hardest things when when I'm working with people. Mm. It's that real, that moment where they know they're unhappy and disenchanted, but like, how do you pivot? How do you, because there's so many things that are already in place that make it so hard to pivot for so many people. So what was your experience?
For me, it took this form. I had this recurring wish to get hit by a city bus. And it didn't hit it didn't get to the point of suicide ideation. I didn't fantasize about killing myself. It's something different, and it is that I fantasized about getting hit and being in the hospital, and therefore no one would expect anything of me.
Oh, wow. Oof.
And I just wanted to lie there and be able to sleep as much as I wanted, be able to think about whatever I wanted, and to not feel guilty about it.
Yeah. Wow.
And I look back now and I think, wow, I at that point, I was incapable of stating my own preferences and my own needs. And I was pretending that they didn't exist, and then hoping that they would magically go away, or hoping somebody else would make that decision for me, as if I couldn't make it for myself, and as if it was anybody else's job to make that decision for me. And that's where I was really abdicating my power to the authorities. But what happens when you're the CEO? What authority can you wait? You know, really, it was, I had to take responsibility for my own life and for my own well-being. And that was when I hear people talking about self-care, I think, oh, that's so important. And I couldn't have heard that term then and resonated with it. Okay. It would have gone in one ear, not mm-hmm. the other. I'm sure people, I know, people tell me now. I did actually say you should take a break, Jolene. Self-care, as the term, doesn't work for me and doesn't work for the many halos that yeah. I work with. Self-responsibility, though, yeah. does.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So helping people go from, and I had to do this myself, go from self-care to self-responsibility.
Mm-hmm. So what did that look like for you specifically? What did it mean?
Oh, yeah. So there were two steps for me after that, and they're intertwined, mm-hmm. and I'm working on them still.
Yeah.
But the second one was going from what I now call fossil fuel energy to solar energy. Mm-hmm. And fossil fuel energy is based on that that sense of having to earn worthiness. So I felt unworthy, and I had to do in order to pay my rent on Earth, or mm-hmm. you know, be worthy of taking up space. Mm-hmm. And that was also based on me not really sure that I even liked myself, and so I was looking to outside people to yeah. like me or to say that I was doing a good job, because I didn't have any internal compass about what I thought was mm-hmm. a good use of my life. I knew that being of service was really important to me, and mm-hmm. I would have done that no matter what people from the outside said, but I wasn't willing to take the responsibility of putting my own limiter on.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore I looked externally for it.
Okay.
So wow. instead of relying on unworthiness and self-loathing as the fuel,
mm-hmm.
I had to find a way to, and you know, fossil fuels, hey, yeah. they work, right?
Yeah.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
they motivate oh, yeah. a heck
yep.
of a lot.
Yep.
But they have some really yucky byproducts
mm-hmm.
that aren't good for the person and aren't good for the people around them either. Yeah. It's like secondhand smoke, right?
Mm-hmm.
Or like a horrible, horribly dirty factory
yeah.
that's belching out this yucky negative energy.
Mm-hmm.
And instead, when I was looking at the people I actually wanted to emulate, they were very productive. And they were, in some cases, working really crazy hours mm-hmm. too. But they were doing it out of a sense of awe, a sense of adventure, mm-hmm. a sense of excitement. And they'd built their life around that.
Yeah.
And so instead of self-loathing, it was self-love.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of unworthiness, it was inherent worth, which is highly ironic, since mm-hmm. why did I get into this in the first place? Because the inherent worth of every individual, no matter what they do or don't do.
Oh, that's, yeah.
Isn't life funny?
So insightful.
I actually cannot wait to listen to this podcast.
I feel like I'm...
because I need to really...
I'm processing it all as we...
I relate so much to everything of what you're saying.
Mm-hmm.
And I, as a coach, health coach mm-hmm. that works with women who have a complicated relationship with food and their bodies, I always tell them, your issues are not about food. They start... Mm. Maybe the food is like a door to start working about the things about life. And, you know, these women that I work with are different ethnicities, shape and sizes, weight, colors, etc. Different.
Mm-hmm.
But there's a common denominator, and that is that rooted belief, it's, as you said, on these innate unworthiness. And mm. also, but also believing the stories, these stories about who you should be, how we should come up mm-hmm. with in certain situations. So there's a lot of, I cannot be weak. I have to come up strong. In terms of like disappointment or grief or breakups or job, etc. And so what did your experience from Free the Slaves? I don't think we've mentioned mm-hmm. Jolene was the CEO of Free the Slaves. Mm-hmm. How did that experience back then as a young woman, what did it teach you about self-compassion and precisely how do you turn off those voices that are telling you you're not worthy, you need to do more
uh-huh.
that
ooh, yeah.
bring you to that bed in the hospital in your fantasy, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Oh yes, for me it was a lot about moving from abdicating to optimizing.
Mm-hmm.
So I had to really come to terms with, as much as I loved being this independent working woman, CEO, helping to foment this movement, I really loved that. And as much as I was, I thrived in the entrepreneurship of that,
mm-hmm.
I I still was abdicating my power, and nobody can do that but me.
Yeah.
I was, I didn't impose an effective limiter on myself. My answer was, if there was something to be done, and no one else was going to do it, or there was nobody I could delegate to, or what have you, then the answer was, well, I'll do it. And the reason, and the way I know that I've done quote unquote enough, is that I drop. Like, you know, bleeding out the eyes kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so I would think, huh, wow, I guess I can operate on 3 hours of sleep a night. Who knew? And then the opposite of that is really looking at it from an optimization standpoint. Like, yes, I could stay up until 3 a.m. to finish that report. Or if I'm really optimizing my time as CEO, huh, that time is better spent figuring out how we can hire another person and what actually, which things am I best at?
Mm-hmm.
How can I actually best serve instead of serving my, this sense of unworthiness and abdicating my power? How can I actually learn enough mm-hmm. about myself, read my own damn owner's manual in order to get honest with myself and others about what is the best way to deploy me?
Wow. I feel like that is the perfect segue. Yeah, it's like, boom, let's take a short break, because in the second part of our conversation, we're going to be talking to Jolene, an anti-slavery trailblazer and meaning and purpose impact researcher, about how we get to that point where we find our sense of purpose, our meaning in life, and how it helps us actually reduce stress and feel better in general, like not only physically, but also mentally.
Welcome back to the Big Life Podcast on Full Service Radio. We are
Ingrid Vaishus
and Lina Salazar, broadcasting live from the lobby of the Line Hotel in Washington, D.C. Welcome to those who are joining the conversation. Our guest today is Jolene Smith, an anti-slavery trailblazer and meaning, purpose, and impact researcher. During the first half of our conversation, Jolene shared her personal story and experience launching and growing the movement against modern slavery and human trafficking in the U.S. We spoke about the challenges and biggest lessons she learned and how they helped her get to this point in her career. So, Jolene, let's now focus on your current research and the why behind it. How did you transition from Free the Slaves to what you're doing right now? What's the connection? Tell us a little bit more about that.
When I stepped down from Free the Slaves, it was really great that the organization was on its way and we could hire in someone who specializes in taking the organization from past the startup phase into the mid-size organization. And because I learned the hard way that I'm a startup person. Mm-hmm. So once it gets to the point, like I've learned about myself, if there's a job description for a role, then I'm not interested.
That's a good criteria.
So interesting, yeah.
And so it was clear that I could best serve elsewhere, and I didn't know what that was, and it was so confusing to me.
Yeah, of course.
Because what I had learned, what I had imbibed, was that all you have to do is find your purpose, mm-hmm. and then you're home free. And then you just have to work really hard in that direction. Well, I took that on hook, line, and sinker, didn't I?
Yeah. You followed the path.
Uh-huh. Yes. And here is where I learned personally the distinction between flame out and burnout. Mm-hmm. I flamed out a couple of times, actually, mm-hmm. while I was at Free the Slaves, where I just worked too much and I needed to take a break. Mm-hmm. And sometimes I thought, yeah, you know, maybe I'm just not cut out for this work anymore. Took a break, reoriented my job description. I did have one.
But you created it
by yourself.
You created it. So that doesn't count.
And then I was good to go again mm-hmm. for a couple of years. And it wasn't until I reached burnout, mm-hmm. which was I was no longer able to turn the corner emotionally
okay.
when there was like if something didn't go well, mm-hmm. I didn't have the emotional reserves in order to just keep going and mm-hmm. and do the reframes necessary. So that for me was how I experienced burnout. When I took a step back to think, what am I going to do next? Since I had to actually go through these three steps, the self-care to self-responsibility and the fossil fuels to solar power and then abdicating to optimizing, I was in the optimizing phase myself, meaning that when I realized, oh, okay, I guess it's not anybody else's job to tell me how I should live or how much I should give.
Mm-hmm.
I was pretending that someone should tell me that, and therefore I could feel okay about myself. But when I got real about that, then I realized, oh, crap, now I have to figure out, like, not just how hard I can work, but as we were saying before, yes. what is the best way?
Yeah.
And I had to face, okay, what am I really horrible about?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, as well as what do I do well? And I was seeing then the pattern. Once I saw the pattern in me, I could see that same pattern in some of the other amazing activists I had the pleasure of working with and also CEOs of corporations that we were working with and philanthropists that, oh, right, it's the ones who had figured out how to optimize themselves. Mm-hmm. They took responsibility for it. Then they were able to really deploy themselves in a way that in which they found meaning and mm-hmm. where they could live out their purpose in a way that was actually sustainable. So so I got really excited about it. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, okay, and now I just want to start sharing this with people. I started yeah. writing a book, which is still one-third written. But I got so excited about helping people through this mm-hmm. path that I started taking on individual clients, and okay. that's what I've been doing for the past few years. And then once I was through that process myself of realizing exactly how I can be best deployed, then there was an opportunity to work for a new organization called Voices for Freedom, which is okay. which helps entire villages in India free themselves from slavery, mm-hmm. which is so consonant mm-hmm. with the other work that I'm doing yeah. because it is about them taking the power.
Yeah. You know? And now you are focused on this meaning and impact project, right?
Mm-hmm. What in addition to everything?
In addition to everything, and being a mom and a wife yeah. and a woman, etc. Mm-hmm. So, yeah. what is that project about?
Mm, yeah, with all the amazing neuroscience and positive psychology that's going on, which I know is near and dear to your hearts too, it is becoming abundantly clear how much individual choice we have in the matter. Of how much empathy we're experiencing, how deep our interpersonal connections are, and how much that affects our overall emotional health, mental health, physical health. And I got really curious about what it would look like if philanthropy started having an emphasis as well as the external impact, the internal impact. What if philanthropists and entrepreneurs were to get really clear themselves about whether they were operating from fossil fuel or mm-hmm. solar power,
yes. yeah.
and whether they were abdicating to some authority, or whether they were taking the responsibility and optimizing themselves, would they be operating from a clearer, more powerful stance, and not do as I was at the beginning of my career? Really looking to outside accolades to to tell me whether I was serving in a way that was right for me. Mm-hmm. And so I've been amalgamating existing research and work that I've been doing with my clients, and then work on the philanthropy mm-hmm. side, and coming up with those research questions that still haven't been investigated fully. So, mm-hmm. So I'm really excited about getting to do that now.
And what is the connection? I know you're just like amalgamating these mm-hmm. research questions, but so far with what you know, and we know there's exactly plenty of research in your science, mm-hmm. but in psychology, etc. Between the connection between sort of like levels of stress and burnout mm-hmm. And sort of like purpose and meaning and finding purpose and meaning. And maybe I'm thinking that I would add to that question before that, maybe you could, because which I think I would be helpful for our listeners, define meaning and purpose.
Yes. Yes. So right now, meaning and purpose, these terms I think are doing a huge disservice, especially to people who are halos, because it's giving them another reason to self-flagellate.
Yes, something else to get good at.
Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, yes.
To discover.
And do it well. And do it figure well. It out.
And figure out, yeah.
I need to take care of myself, find my mission and meaning and purpose in life, and do it well.
Uh-huh. Yes, yes, yes. And so purpose has this overtone of being very spiritual and preordained. And what I've found, I'm most interested in what practical concepts can help people make change in their life today. And it has come back for me to human rights, where it all started. If we believe that each human being has inherent worth and that we're all created equal, most people can go with me there.
Yeah.
If I say that even people who've been convicted of a crime are deserving of human rights, most people listening to this podcast, I'm assuming, would they'd nod along. Yeah, of course they deserve basic human rights. When we get to this next one, it's a real doozy. So prepare yourself.
Okay. Shoot. Let's see.
What if every human being alive is worthy? What if we're already worthy? What if we're already worthy of being here and taking up space because we're here? And if we approach it from that angle, and I learned about this angle first from a woman named Brooke Castillo, and it really kind of got into my craw, like, I don't know about that one. But because it just seemed like, well, our meaning and our purpose just needs to be helping everybody else, and then we get to be a purposeful meaning and have meaning in our lives. But actually, if we look at it from the stance of we're all already worthy, then we get to make the choice of, okay, well, great. If I'm already worthy, what do we do then? Mm-hmm. And what I've found for me and what my clients find time and again, it's more fun to live a life where you're helping other people or you're giving to something that's larger than yourself.
Yeah.
It's just more fun. And if we treat it like that and see it as this icing on the cake, like getting to wake up in the morning and I get to be a part of this larger, wonderful change that's happening as we're living today. That is what is most exciting and most enduring and most meaning producing mm-hmm. for people. So a lot of the work that I do now is really based in helping people accept the fact that they're already worthy. Mm-hmm. And then from there, we can get creative.
Yeah.
Because if they're not trying to earn their worth or prove their worth, they don't have that egoic, grandstanding kind of stuff going on. We can just get down to business and get some real, real progress mm-hmm. happening.
So from a practical, like thinking of anyone listening to the podcast and being, okay, definitely want to move in this direction, what are some thoughts, ideas, like what can get people thinking of like, what is that meaning? Like, okay, I'm inherently worthy. I know that. I want to contribute to a larger cause, but I just don't, like, there's so many things that need our attention, would benefit from us giving our time to it or money or whatever works for you. How do you go about figuring out what that cause is when you're working with someone who's like not clear on it?
So most people won't be able to immediately jump to I'm worthy.
Yeah.
So for those listening who say, oh, heck no, just pretend. Pretend for the moment that you are worthy. And then from that place, if you're already worthy, what would you do? What would you love doing? What would really light you up? And if it's painting a mural, or if it's playing with preschoolers, or writing legislation, like whatever it is, just let yourself want that. And see where that takes you, and take one tiny step in that direction. Your path will not appear until you move. So first, just allow yourself to want what you want, even just for a day, and take one tiny step, and then see what opens up.
Oof, yeah. Your path will not appear until you move. So you have to take responsibility for what it is that you want.
Amen.
Yep.
The research.
This is so us. The research.
I love it.
Because for some reason, I don't know why. Listen, I in my experience coaching and being in a 12-step program of recovery and having an eating disorder and now working with women, I feel like the truths are have always been there, and sometimes we just need the research to tell us that it's true. Like, yes, you drink water. Yes, you should eat vegetables and move, right? And the research keeps telling us. And now it's so incredibly powerful, exactly, that more recently neuroscience has been showing the effects on our brain, and it's proving, it's not proving, but showing correlation between, like, giving, volunteering, etc. And so, like, emotional health emotional health, well-being in general. So is there anything else that you can share with us about these connections and what the research is saying about it?
So in short, it's helpful to remember that we're primates. We are social mammals, and when we don't have that, when we don't have human connections that we feel really, you know, in our bones, that we understand another person and that person understands us, it's really difficult for us to do anything else. And so the research about depression and anxiety and many of these studies are pointing to having those close human relationships as being, it's not a silver bullet, but it's one of the indicators that a person can be more able to withstand the highs and lows when they have those connections. And so now there's additional research that's going on currently. It's not completed, about what does that mean about service? There have been a number of studies that's showing that when we do something that's of service to someone else, we get a hit of dopamine and serotonin. So do they, and so does everybody else watching. So we know that we are inherently wired for that. And Franz De Waal has some really fascinating research about how we're wired for cooperation as much as we're wired for competition. And does this get enhanced even further when we're working with a group of people with whom we have these positive human connections? And I think we all know, of course, the answer is yes. But to what degree? I think it'll be really fascinating when those studies are completed. Also, be really fascinating to, I think big data is going to show us a lot in the next, even just in the next couple of months, about what happens, for example, when we give online versus what happens to us when we give person to person, and what can we do in order to enrich online interactions so that we do derive more meaning and purpose, that sense of purpose and human connection when we're giving to earthquake relief, mm-hmm. or when we're helping somebody whom we don't know and we'll never meet. And really that's what modern philanthropy has really developed. It's the ability to help someone immediately who is on the other side of the planet. That's beautiful. And that's a wonderful gift. But how do we take into account that we are these primates who need that social interaction? I love thinking of ways that we might be able to enhance that and then ultimately study it and get the numbers behind it.
And I feel like that's moving because I can't remember. I was at a presentation a couple of weeks ago about giving and philanthropy and how obviously the United States is one of the countries that gives the most in terms of personal giving, but also how it's changing with millennials where, sure, they'll want to give, but they also want to be part of the process and want to be able to find the meaningful way to give that is not just doing this online donation. That's fine, but if they can find ways to find more meaning and more contact, then they're going to derive a much better experience and then are likely to give and contribute even more.
Yeah, like that. Fascinating. Like being just, and I think about myself.
Yeah.
Right. I donate online, and but the reason why I feel about those donations, it's also because I work closely with an organization that does great work in DC, well, in DMV about food access, and just knowing about the impact and being closer to it, it just feels more authentic.
Yeah.
And exactly, that makes me feel good about it.
So I feel like we could talk to you for hours because this is just the tip of the iceberg, and I feel like at some point we're going to have you back.
Yeah, this was part one of this episode, by the way.
I feel like I have
yeah.
so many questions
for nonprofits. How do you actualize this?
So much to talk about. But we both believe in, like, ending the show in a positive note and the value of thinking positively, which is what we've talked about throughout the conversation. So tell us a little bit more about how you live a big life. What does living a big life look like for you and mean for you?
For me, living a big life is about spending more time and energy creating the life and the world that I want to live in than I spend on bemoaning what isn't happening or stuck in negative thought loops that really aren't helping anybody.
And what does success look like for you now?
Ooh, success looks like for me now. Actually, I aspire to flame out.
Okay.
yes, I'm going to adopt that term.
I know. Love it. We're going to make it a thing.
but flame out for me means, I have a family, and that's really important to me too. But, you know, hey, what does it look like to flame out with my family?
Yes.
You know, what if we were to do family super intensely, such that we actually all need a break at the end of the day? Like that's really great. Fun to me. I like, awesome. I like intensity, so it's awesome. Fun to play with.
And then finally, if people resonated with what you're saying, they want to get in touch with you, they want to work with you, how do they get in touch with you?
My website is jolenesmith.us, so not .com, but .us. And I'm also really interested in connecting with people who are interested in meaning and purpose research. So I love personal stories. I love, if you've seen a study that you think should be included in this work, please let me know. And I'll be putting out more writing. It's not all going to stay in my third finished file cabinet forever. So let me know if you'd like to talk about it.
Awesome.
I promise there will be part two, or we promise there will be part two of this episode. Jolene, it was great having you on the show. I resonated with so much of what you said. And this is going to be an episode for my curriculum in my program and like work with my clients. I think that more than takeaways, I think that I have three questions for those who are listening. And the first one is, are you taking responsibility of your own life and your well-being? That's a key question. And the second one is, are you looking for worth in the right things? Like where are you finding a sense of worth? And as you said, if you were worthy, if you were innately worthy and you didn't have to demonstrate that you have worth, what would you do with your life? And then
I would add on to
ahead,
that,
Ingrid.
If you are worthy, what would you do? And then how would you optimize that?
Of course, those mm-hmm. the from self-care to self-responsibility, mm-hmm. from like unworthiness to self-love, and the abdicating to optimizing. Mm-hmm. I think we all have to listen to this podcast yeah. again. So it was great having you on the show. And next week, you cannot miss next week's episode, because we'll be with Chris Perrin, who's the co-owner and co-manager of Cut 7. And he will get on the mic to share his experience with stress, burnout, and meditation. Don't miss that episode.
Thank you so much for joining us. And if you're enjoying the show, please be sure to rate us and give us a review on iTunes. And if you have any ideas for people who you might be interested in hearing, or any topics you'd like to hear on the show, connect with us via Instagram at Ingrid_wellness.
Or at leave.well.way.
So thank you so much, and we'll see you next week.
Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to this program on Full Service Radio, broadcasting and recording from the Line Hotel in Adams Morgan, Washington, D.C. Full Service Radio programming can be accessed live and archived on fullserviceradio.org. Our talk programming is available on most podcast apps like iTunes and Stitcher, and our DJ sets are available on mixcloud.com/fullserviceradio. Full Service Radio features over 30 weekly shows and over 50 local hosts, covering every topic imaginable. If you want to be a guest or get involved, email us at info@fullserviceradio.org. Follow us on Twitter at @FullServiceRDO, on Instagram and Facebook at Full Service Radio. Thanks for listening.